And it's Tuesday and it's 10 o'clock, and that means it's time for another Tom and Shane podcast. And we'd like to welcome everyone. Hey, don't forget to hit the subscribe button. I mean, it just takes a second. You know, there's a 10% chance you won't fall out of an air balloon, you know, if you hit the subscribe button.
True.
Ring the notification bell. You'll always be notified of our next podcast. And, of course, like us. Leave a comment because YouTube moves us up the search if that happens. So we hope you'll do that for us. Also, if you'd like to support us monetarily, Patreon is the way to do it. There's a link in the description below on YouTube and Facebook both. And we are brought to you by StreamYard. And how hard can it be if I can do it? I'm working it right now. So there's a link to a free a version of that in the description below on YouTube. So check that out. All right, Shane. Boy, we've got a full docket today. We're going to talk about forgive student loans. Should we forgive student loans? That is the question. What do you think?
Well, it's a moot point. 92% of the $1.7 trillion owned by student loans is held by the U.S. government. And what we need to do is talk about what the solution is for the U.S. government to resolve that issue. You know, we get this misguided suggestion of canceling it, or in the case of Biden's policy, can't, you know, not charging interest for a while. But at the end of the day, payments are based on annual income of people that have taken out student loans and the family size. And it's all regulated because it's government. And after 20 or 25 years of payments, making payments, the remaining balance can be forgiven. So it's one of these situations that we want to talk about, because obviously $1.7 trillion in debt on the U.S. balance sheet is not a good thing. But, you know, let's talk about how it came about and what the numbers are.
Yeah. Well, right now, as you pointed out, we got $1.7 trillion in student debt. We've got average student loan of $39,000 per loanee, 43 million of them. Or 45 million, I should say, and 99% of them, or 95% of them, have loan debt. So, I guess you know, should that be forgiven or not? On that side of the ledger, a lot of people who paid their student loans say, "No, I paid mine.
That's right.
Shouldn't be forgiven. So why should these people get off the hook when I work my butt off and work three jobs and whatever to pay mine off, and you know, I've got a degree and I paid for it." So I think a lot of people feel that way. The other thing too is that the other side of this coin with student loans thing is that they're talking about free tuition as well for colleges. And to my way of thinking, that's going to put a lot of people in college classrooms who don't have any business being there. And I got chastised on Facebook for that. Who doesn't belong there? Well, as we all know, there are a lot of people who barely get through high school. And probably the only reason they got through high school is that the teachers maybe felt sorry for them and put them through regardless. So,
well, one of the great ways of solving this problem is simple. Yeah. Simple solutions to big problems. Okay, here it is. The U.S. government should pass legislation, because they do a lot of funding of private and public colleges, that any school that has an endowment fund of more than some amount, say $500 million or whatever they're holding, can't charge tuition. Mm-hmm. So now it becomes a case of eligibility. And then the U.S. government, in that piece of legislation, establishes the eligibility.
Right.
So if you're going to have people after high school want to go to a undergraduate type of situation, they can go then to a community college or a state and local college. So in that legislation, you put in there that it's up to the states to decide what, if any, tuition is in their state colleges or their community colleges. Mm-hmm. solves a problem. Mm-hmm. And that you know, right now when you have a you know, law schools, of course the most famous one, $29 billion in an endowment fund. I mean, they can rebuild that school like 20 times. They don't need to charge outrageous fees for people to go to school there. And the people that have graduated from that particular legal school, we all know what it is. You know, the people will continue to contribute to the endowment fund, probably more, knowing that they're paying for the cost of people to go to school there. A lot of these colleges are built in parts of cities, urban areas that there's really nowhere to expand, and they're not going to tear down these some of these schools because, you know, they're heritage schools, and maybe build some glass towers over a couple of buildings like they do with churches, you know, in urban areas. So the easy solution to a big problem, we have the biggest solution coming up, which we'll talk about, you know, in the last 5 or 10 minutes. But yeah, that's my position on it. Make these endowment funds cover the costs of people going to school, legislate it. And it's great because the government say, oh, and by the way, we don't have any reason to give these schools tax exemption or lend them any more money. I mean, we'll lend it to schools that we think require the money, like the African-American schools that Trump contributed to, because, you know, they would come every year and see him after this, you know, the second year, and say, why do you people keep coming back? Well, we don't have money. What do you mean you don't have money? Every school. No, not us. And he legislated it and got it through. But
yeah,
there you go. Simple solutions is what we're looking for.
Yeah, Trump gave more to black colleges than any president in history, including Obama. So,
Woe is me.
Yeah. Well, I know in some states like California, New York, Florida, Texas, whatever, some of the I think at the state level it would work. I'm not sure how it would work in Montana, Wyoming, where there's not a big population of taxpayers to fund these colleges. You know, some federal money, I think, is needed for some states, Alaska being another one that would has a pretty low population. So, but yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, there are people, again, and I'm going to emphasize this, that I'm all for people getting an education who can take that education and do something with it. But there are also some people who, you know, just, I mean, look at the people who don't make it through 4 years now, Shane.
That's right. And end up with a debt. That's right.
Yeah. They end up with a debt. They, you know, as I say, you know, to the people who have gone out and done three jobs or four jobs or whatever to pay their debt off, you know, is it fair to those people to have this debt just wiped off the plates of these people, and they're home free?
And we got here because in 2005 banks stopped lending to students. Basically, I mean, there are some cases now where they are, but it's very expensive with high interest rates. So the U.S. government took it over. The first was the Federal Perkins Loan Act, of course, named after the U.S. House of Representatives from Kentucky, you know, Member Perkins. Yeah. And they started, you know, lending money out. And the great thing about this type of loan, the Perkins loan, based on credits and, you know, based on ability, it was a base 5% loan. But it grew so quickly, you know, within, you know, 12 years, in 2017, September 30th, 2017, your federal government stopped funding it. So those went away. Then they had the Federal Family Education Loan Program. And, you know, this was part of an act that actually goes back to 1965, but it really didn't start taking off until, again, you know, after banks stopped lending. And, it grew rather quickly. Mm-hmm. And 6.5 million students owned, you know, 56 billion on this. But again, the Health Care and Education, I love this, Reconciliation Act of 2002 stopped or terminated payment to the funding for that. So that went away. So, you know, so the impact on education since those two programs has changed considerably. And that's where the additional debt has come from, which is about 800, what is it, 800 million? You know, yeah. Because they've had to take out, you know, personal loans or not, personal loans, maybe from family or friends or a bank debt loan if they can. Remember, the important aspect of this is that 89% of these loans are undergraduate, meaning the first 4 years. Mm-hmm. 11 to 12% represent graduate students, you know, going on for a second degree or going on to get a doctorate in some type of passion of theirs, or, you know, even going on to higher education to be lawyers or doctors or dentists and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's, some of the liberal arts loans, you're probably not going to be the curator of a museum. There aren't that many of them. So,
Well, that's right. And you know, the medical industry is tough because you pre-med's mm-hmm. 4 years, and then mm-hmm. you go on to med school for 2 years, become a resident to determine the type of medicine you want to pursue. And that could be another 2 years, to depending on how complicated it is, whether you want to just deal with emergency, be an emergency room doctor or basic surgery. Mm-hmm. But if you want to go on to some type of major surgery, you can be basically 10 years in, mm-hmm. Paying to learn that skill. So that's the difficulty. Lawyers are the same, 4 years pre-law. Law school can be anywhere from 2 to 4 years, depending on the type of law that you go into. So if you're pursuing the higher income jobs in the first world, you're looking at upwards between 8 and 10 years of legal costs. And of course, you're going to the best schools, and their annual fees can be anywhere from $100,000 to $150,000 a year, depending on where you go.
I was going to say, you come out with a specialist degree of some kind, you're going to be in six figures.
You're easily going to be, $2 to $4 million in debt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for true. That's so true. Dave says that existing low-cost alternative education path already exists. Start with junior college, and after completing the basic requirements, then move on to a senior college or a four-year institution. And that's exactly what I did, Dave. I did exactly that. I went to a junior college first and then a full-blown university. So,
And 80 to 82% of the high school graduates don't go to college. They go on to a job they may already have and continue there. Mm-hmm. And that's why one of the great successes of these mega franchises, the U.S. developed over the last 50 years in the food industry and so forth, were such a great thing because kids could go to work there, flexible hours, going to college. Or high school. My girl started working at 16. I told him, go out and get a job. Mm-hmm. I'm no more weekly allowance. You want spend? And they did. My one daughter went and got a job as a cashier at Safeway and did exceedingly well. My other daughter went in the restaurant business, which she liked because she got cash every day.
Yeah, right? That's right.
So, she continued on in the restaurant industry, my older daughter, because of her enjoyment of it. And, they're both outgoing people, very friendly. And then, at 23, she decided to go into medicine, mm-hmm. So it worked well for her. She moved to Kamloops with Thompson University here and went into medical school and had a job at a great resort year round. So, it was there year round for her, and it had flexible hours. So, she could go to school and work. And My other daughter, she went off to Australia and got in the movie business. So there you go. Pursue your passions. That's why I always say, live to work, work to live. If you get up every day and you live to work because you're doing something you have passion and love for, you'll want to do it. You want to jump out of bed and go and work. But, if you work to live, you're working for the man. And nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. But your scope of advancement or success will obviously depend on your ability to do your job well and get along with others.
Yeah. If you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. We've all heard from our parents for years.
Well, I tried to teach my children that. I hope it worked. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now that we're in here, let's finish off with this. And then I think we should end the program with a comment about Elon Musk, because Pat is on our back. We made this call on this a month ago, and we were right. So I think we're entitled to, you know, take a bow and thank all the people following us and tell others we were right again, because we really appreciate it. Thomas told you how. So my solution to this problem is very simple. You know, if you get the opportunity to prove to your federal government that you'll pay the loan, so they pass legislation saying, you know, whatever your loan is, you show a willingness to pay 10% off in a year. So $35,000, that's $3,500 a month. So that's like $300 a month, or and you pay it off. Well, you know, you've got two institutions in the government, Freddie Mae and Fannie Mae. And both of these are institutions set up to lend money to people, just like a student that has a loan. And the great thing about it is that, you know, when you look at this, you go, wow, this is a pretty good deal. And the reason it's a pretty good deal is that, you know, if you get a flexible Freddie Mac home from the government, it's only a 3% requirement down. So if you've been paying to the government 10% in that year, then, you know, 3%, you know, the government says, here, instead of even paying anything down because you paid off your loan, we'll give you $500,000 at a reasonable rate and fix it so it doesn't get hit, they don't get hammered by interest, and consolidate your student loan into that loan. And you can go out and buy a $200,000-$300,000 home, have $100,000 in the bank to fix it up, or, you know, for you to get going. And now you're part of the American dream. You can do the same thing with Freddie Mac. You know, they have established guidelines. But, you know, Freddie Mac is great because you only are required a 660 or higher credit score. So, you know, that's middle range. And most people that have been paying off their 10% a year to the government on their student debt will increase their credit score, because the credit agencies will see they're paying off the debt, and all of a sudden, bam, they'll be in a position to get a Freddie Mae or Fannie Mae loan, and as I said, become a part of the American dream. Yeah. Simple solution, big problem, and now guess what? $1.6 trillion is off your debt.
Yeah,
off, gone. It's gone, solved. You right. didn't have to give it up. You didn't have to pay it.
Right.
Don't have to try and collect it. And everyone involved, you know, Margaret Thatcher did something similar to this with all the brownstones they had that the government built in London after rebuilding the city after World War II. And it was public housing. People moved in. They made monthly payments. And when she became prime minister, she said, you know, anybody that's been in one of these now for 20 years, everything they pay goes towards a mortgage of what the balance is that we're going to say it is. Government's going to give them the loan at a flat interest rate. And tens of thousands of British people were now landowners. You know, they had, as you say, they had something in the fight, right? They had meat in the game, or whatever the expression
is. All right. We got a lot of comments coming in here, Shane. We got to get these comments out of the way. So let's do this. Wayne says, I agree. That's what our daughter did in 2024 for her educational degree. 2 years at Northern Michigan College, very affordable. And then her last 2 years at Spring Harbor Ferris State. Dave weighs in again. One of the best predictors for success is completing a four-year degree is for the student to be employed and contributing their costs as they go. Students with no skin in the game are far more likely to drop out.
And another point that Dave makes there too, that we should qualify, is that you know, the 70-year record of college graduates show that over 85% of them go on to, you know, the opportunity of a better middle income to lower upper income, even because middle up, you know, they go from, you know, a five figure to a six figure job in their life because of it.
Yeah. Craig says, how come nobody's addressing the cost of college? Textbooks are a racket. Professors get kickbacks and can't resell them. Well, I know you can buy used books
at colleges.
At every college, you got they have a used book place that will cut the cost of books.
Other students will sell to you there, but they're not going to keep them. So if they can get 50% of their money back.
Yeah, as long as it's the right one. So.
Oh, by the way, that's part of the underground market. We got to remember that $1.2 trillion we talked about, that black market.
There you are. Question for Shane. Have college education costs increased so dramatically in Canada? So
that they have. The remarkable statistic on that since 1950, you'll all be happy to know the single greatest increase in education have been the administrators. Not only in public schools, but in private school colleges. Get it. Sit down for this one, folks. 700% increase since 1950 in administrator salaries. Mm-hmm. So, you're talking in 70 years, they've gotten like 100%. I mean, like, or whatever, 700%, you know, that's astounding. But that's really the hidden cost of why education is so expensive.
That's true. Craig says $500 textbooks and professors require new books and students can resell their used books. And I might point out that I myself wrote a textbook that was used at two U.S. universities. Thank you very much.
I went to university for 6 years and I never paid for a book. I mean, at the bookstore, I bought them from other people and it was great because they had study notes, like you said, and
everything's lined out, all the things you need.
That's right. I'm a speed reader, so the reason I did well in school is because I would just continually read any books I was required to, the entire book.
I did well in school because I was a world-class ass-kisser of the teachers.
And a great athlete.
And a great athlete, too.
There you go, buddy. Yeah.
Both things are going for me, so.
Yeah, it works for you.
I don't know. The only degree I have is a third degree. I got that several times.
That's right. Yeah, those honeydew lists, those weekend. Yeah,
that's for sure. Yeah, so. Let's see. Got a couple other things on here. MSU professors require newest editions of math books, and students cannot resell them because next semester requires a new book, and those books are hundreds of dollars. So,
The only problem with that today, with the social networking, they're all online now, Tom.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's
they're all online.
Yeah, it's not the big deal that it was, but your books and things can be pricey.
If you want to give your child or grandchild a great book when they graduate high school to go off in life, whether they go on to college or not, The Art of War. Okay, it's a simple little book.
There you go.
And number two, The Greatest Salesman in the World. Two little books, single most bestsellers, aside from the Bible, ever. So, you should give either all three of those books or two of those books to your graduating children or grandchildren or great-grandchildren.
Yeah. So. All right. StreamYard says we're having a problem connecting to LinkedIn. So.
Who's that? I don't know.
I don't know who they are over there. So. I don't know. You don't realize the hoops you have to jump through to get on LinkedIn to begin with. Holy mackerel.
Oh, and used to submit. I used to, but don't go there now.
I had to submit about 40,000 billion things to them. So, okay. Anyway,
that's a professional work site for people looking for work and want to share information or get answers, with regards to business principles.
Yeah.
It's basically a businessman's Facebook, right?
Yeah. Obviously, Shane had taken a course at MSU lately. You went to MSU, actually, didn't you, Shane?
I did indeed. I did indeed.
Yeah, they still use books. Lessons are online, but textbooks are still required, and they cost way too much. So, may be, I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, it's like when you go to the hospital, the aspirin's $80. I mean, there's more tied into the cost of the book than just the book itself.
Yeah, when you go to the hospital, it's BYOB, bring your own bucks, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, if they'll let you bring them, that's the thing. They got to log it all in. And is this your personal medicine? And no, we won't allow that. And you can't have this and whatever.
Well, so, well, the great thing is you can't review your bill. So you can't even check to see, did I take a medicine? Did I take an aspirin? You know,
What day was that? Yeah. I don't know. We're digressing away from student loans into the medical.
Okay, let's not. If we're going to digress, let's talk briefly about Mulan. He pulled it off. Great bid. He forced the hand of the board. They're incompetent. There's no question. His lawyers made that clear to them. They're all liable now. They did this because the numbers come out this week on Twitter. And they're going to be terrible, and that board is in deep trouble. Anyone who was a member of the board pre-Musk is seriously liable for the mismanagement. So that's a great thing. He's going to take it private, which means anyone that owns any shares gets paid what he offered, meaning anyone who bought it when it dropped under that price has made money. Mm-hmm. People that bought it for a higher price and kept onto it, institutions would – there that they can go after the previous board for the difference.
Yeah.
But the important thing is, this is a great win, and it's going to be great for us to watch it. We will, folks, over the coming months. We'll keep you posted.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why there's such fear. There was the same fear when Trump was elected, oh my God, he's going to go nuts and who knows what's going to happen. And the market dropped and everybody went crazy, and it was much better than anyone could have imagined. So,
well, I think Trump has a platform called One America or America First.
America First, yeah.
Yeah, and I saw the fellow that he hired to run it, and they're saying he's going to stay there. He's not going back to Twitter. But that's okay because Elon Musk has 80 million people.
Yeah.
And the great thing is guess who's tied into this? Government people, entertainment people, legal people, people that have a following. So, the board never took up the idea recommended 2 years ago by a person they paid millions of dollars to come in and suggest what to do. And he said, well, charge these. Mm-hmm. I mean, and not a small amount. You can charge because anybody else isn't going to go. There's several thousand people right now that work for Twitter. That increased drastically, with Trump and their restriction of it. So, it's an automated system. I would bet between 60. I think 30% of the people will leave just because they don't like, they don't like Elon. And he'll probably get rid of another 30-40% because it's all automated, and then charge, somewhere between $5-$10 a month for people to use Twitter. And
he's not going to charge. There's no social media that's going to charge it, is it? That's a death knell.
I'm not saying he has to. I'm trying to perceive what the possibilities are, Tom.
Well, that's an impossibility.
Well, there you go. You don't think so? I do. We'll see what happens.
Well, Facebook hasn't charged. LinkedIn doesn't charge. Parler doesn't charge. Yeah,
but they sell advertising, and Musk has said that he doesn't think that
he's taking the company private.
Yeah, so he's not going to have any advertising on it. No.
That's another person, the reason for people to join.
Yeah, but he's a capitalist. Mulan does not give, Ed Musk does not give, stuff away.
If he charges for Twitter, then you're going to see it go the way of MySpace.
Well, then that's where it goes. He doesn't care,
Well, he's also got other people in this besides himself. He's not
he's on the hook. He's got banks but he's guaranteed all those loans. No, this is his $42 million. He has some investors, but it's a very small portion that will not interfere with what he wants to do. And
they may not interfere, but they may take exception if things start going south and their investments in trouble.
They can always go to him and offer to sell their debt, they owe to him, it'll be private, and that's the only way they'll be able to get out.
They'll get out for pennies on the dollar too.
That's a risk you take. The other success is that if it works and he remodels it in 2 years, he'll take it public again. That's what buyouts usually do. When they buy a company out, they clean it up, they change the board, They, you know, infuse money into it, expand it, make acquisitions, and then all the stock they put it, they bought to fund it, it needs 2 years to, you know, to get to age, to become free trading. It takes 2 years, and then, you know, 2 to 3 years later, they take it back public, and, you know, and bam, away you go. Now I can sell.
Yeah, I don't see him selling it.
I'm just.
No, I know. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm. You stated your point of view. I'm stating mine.
Okay.
I'm not arguing with you.
Oh, okay.
I'm just giving my opinion. You gave yours. Okay.
All right, buddy. Fair play.
My opinion is, if I've got control of social media and I've got control of what goes out over the airways that I want to say, I'm keeping that.
Oh, he's not. He has no interest in interfering with what it goes out over the airways. He's going to open it up to the airways, and he's going to open up the, you know, the algorithms to the airways.
Uh-huh.
And, it'll be a free speech platform, you know. Uh-huh. But I think that there may be limited things. Like, I don't think they're going to allow pornography on it. I don't think they're going to allow, you know, executions. I mean, you know, there'll be
there's going to be some restrictions, but as there should be. But
although but I think if I had
a platform that I could control, that I could put out what I personally want to put out, I'm not giving that up. I'm not selling it.
That's true. I'd like to make one observation. I think the videos that ISIS released, you know, did vast harm to whatever their, you know, claim was or what they were for or what. I mean, it just made people sick. So, you know, when Trump took his action and basically wiped them out, everybody went, yay, these people are sick. I mean, that was really bad stuff. So there you go.
Yeah. Do you think Musk will allow hate speech propaganda? I hope so. I hope he does.
Well, I everything he's done in the past, everything you've seen him do in his life says, yeah.
Because it should be up to the reader as to what's hateful and what's not. And the reader what's propaganda and what's not. Should be up to the reader as to what's misinformation and what's not.
That's right. And you know, you could qualify stuff by having a tag. You know, if it's disinformation, they put a tag up and you click on the tag. This is not true. Right. Stuff like that, you know.
Well, that's what I say. And, you know, if you think it's misinformation up there, then you have the right to comment on it and say, hey, this is disinformation. And here's my link, or here's my proof, or here's the source that debunks it.
Well, there's that famous saying, right? Never make a comment. You know, keep your mouth shut. If you open it, you'll show what a kind of a fool you are. But at the end of the day, what you're looking for is you see people on there making claims that are found out to be not true, and that's a good thing. Yeah, I mean, it's as important to discredit people and not humble them, but shame them. I think one of the greatest losses in the last 60 years is shame. You know, we don't shame people. We don't make people accountable. So now we have this social network, global social network, that allows people to be shamed by their own words. And I think that's a very positive thing.
Well, that's what happened with social media. At least in the beginning, you could rebuck, things you disagreed with. And now the censors come in and say, oh, your rebuttal is wrong politically. So we're not going to post that. So the misinformation keeps on going.
Well, once Elon sets the protocol, once he sets the standards, once he sets the guidelines, guess what happens to every other platform? They got to follow the same thing.
No, they don't.
I'm not saying they will. I said they got to. No. So meaning over time, they probably will, because all of a sudden people, you know, will look at Facebook and go, I'm going to go find a different platform or whatever, you know, whatever the platform is. You have this stuff that's wide open, like TikTok, right? And I've spent very little time on TikTok, maybe an hour since it's been around. Like
it's a Chinese propaganda tool.
Exactly. And it's mud for young people's minds as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah. But I'll tell you, I don't see NBC or MSNBC or CNN following Fox's lead. And I don't see Facebook and any of the others following Twitter's lead.
Okay, we'll see. It's going to be fun. I'm really looking forward to seeing how. And because this guy moves at the light of speed. I mean, like his rockets, man. No grass grows under Elon Musk's feet. Okay, so this is a race. Mm-hmm. It's not a nice walk.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Facebook has the biggest audience, as Craig points out, obviously, and everybody knows that. But still, Zuckerberg is not going to become the free speech champion because of his politics.
His politics
will not allow him to do that.
And
he's already lost how many billions he went to Meta, and the stock went from 300 down to below 200.
Going to 1.25, baby. I told you that 4 months ago. Yep. But let's not forget that Facebook was the first platform. And we know the history of the networks, ABC, NBC, and CBS, where they ended. They had all of it, too. And fool's gold for them because they didn't manage it well. And now it's all gone. So CNN comes along. Wow. Ba-boom. Huge. Mm-hmm. Every airport, every home. Look where it is now. You know, it's in the wastebasket. Why? Mm-hmm. Mismanagement. So let's see let's see how Facebook ends up. He's got serious problems. He's losing followers seriously. Mm-hmm. And global people are not picking up on it like they were in the last 20 years. But he was the first platform. And, you know, Coca-Cola was the first Coke.
Yeah. So there you are. So, yep. That's where we are.
And now PepsiCo is the largest restaurant business in the world. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's why they came out with New Coke, because Pepsi was beating them up in the supermarkets. So
and they didn't shoot themselves in the foot. They blew their feet off.
I was going to say,
they had to sew the feet back on and go back to the original. Yeah, the original sauce, as it were. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we got away from student loans a little bit, but hopefully it's still entertaining podcast. So
listen, buddy, you deserve a pat on your shoulder. I'm gonna pat myself on the shoulder about Elon Musk. Good call, pal. We did it right.
All right, coming up on Thursday, Mike McCormick's gonna join us. We're gonna talk about the Musk in detail. We're also gonna talk about the rotten first quarter that we had recently, and coming out of this recession, going into the recession, actually, or already in it. From as Shane and I believe, so we're going to do that on Thursday. So,
don't listen to these doughheads on financial news and everything about can you catch the bottom, folks? There's no bottom here, okay? Right now, there's no bottom.
There is.
They only want you to buy so they can sell short to you. All right, so be listening to these people.
There we go. Well, Musk and Gates are at it because Gates went short on Tesla.
I'm telling you the call. Someone's got to get to Elon about Tesla. He's got to split it at least 10 for 1. 20 for 1 would be ideal. He's got to split it 10 for 1.
Hell, he might.
By the way, the other big thing that is coming out this week is Alphabet's numbers. And we saw what happened with Netflix. I mean, the stock is now down 75%. Mm-hmm. It got slammed yesterday and went down 35% on their numbers. So let's see how Alphabet, Google is doing. That's going to be this will be a big one, folks. If Google, Tesla's went up 2% because they had great numbers, and then they dropped 7%. Now, let's see what happens if Google's numbers, good or bad. How much it drops. If it drops precipitously, like 10-15%, bam. Yeah. Elon split Tesla 10 or 20 to 1.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be a buy. All right. Let's see. Hey, don't forget to subscribe. I mean, it's easy. The button's in the lower right-hand corner. I mean, click it. I mean, nothing's going to happen to you. You're not going to get emails. You're not going to get notices. You're not going to get anything going on. So by all means, do that. Also, ring the notification bell. Slam that bell. That'll let you know whenever we're on again. And like us. Leave a comment below. YouTube really enjoys that kind of stuff and helps us out. And if you'd like to support us monetarily, Patreon, there's a link in the description below. All the benefits you get for being a contributor to Tom and Shane.
That's right. And just going to comment on what Craig said here next. Mm-hmm. He says, Netflix is a bargain. No stock right now listed in North America is a bargain until it gets 10 times earnings. Okay. Mm-hmm. They're all dropping from 30 to 40 or more times earnings.
Yeah.
16 has always been the standard for 50 years of when to buy a stock. Mm-hmm. Netflix is below that now. I think it's at 12.
Yeah.
Nothing is going to be a buy for the next 6 months. So no, not a good thing. Nothing.
Nope. That's our story and we're sticking to it.
Oh, thank you. I agree with you. I agree with you 100%.
All right. That's going to wrap it up for us. Thanks everybody for being with us. Hey, don't forget to subscribe, ring the notification bell, like us. And we will see everybody on Thursday with Mike McCormick. So bye for now.